No, thank you, Chair. I guess the Chair wants me to start dealing with the issue that was outstanding. Let me really appreciate this opportunity, and I couldn't be here last week because I was out of the country doing some work. Chair, let me place it on record that I've gone through the letter from the Honourable Member, and I have since replied to the media that made this request to come to this portfolio committee, so that everybody that is informed by this media is correctly informed on this matter. The second issue, Chair, is that I would want to plead with this portfolio committee to try and stick to issues that are relevant, that should be dealt by this portfolio committee concerning the department in here. The matter which was raised by the Honourable Member, it's an administrative matter that, unless something grossly has gone wrong, should not actually be an item of discussion in here. Furthermore, if there are issues of questions, like it normally take place, as a minister, any member of parliament has the right to ask me any question, and I deal with these questions all the time. But nevertheless, I wish to place it on record that the said person has the necessary qualifications. He has served in different provinces like Northern Cape, in the Treasury Department, Free State, and she has been a DDG for quite some time. At level 15. So we have followed all the processes that we need to follow to ensure that we deal what we needed to deal with. And maybe to wrap this up, I will request that these members should be able to support the department in whatever transformation that we are going to do. This may not be the first one or the last one. As we move forward, we will adjust in accordance with the challenges that faces us as a department. And that will not do under the tables. We will do transparently and will not hide anything. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, there is the answer, Honourable Members. Honourable Lorima, Honourable Nyambi, Honourable Piginini, Honourable Mandel.
Minister, thanks for your response. I'm sorry that it had to take so long for us to get it. I do think that I disagree with you on whether or not this committee has a right to raise issues like this. That is what we're here for. We are here to oversee the work of the department, and that includes appointments too. There is an understandable concern about this particular appointment. It being to a highly specialized technical position, and for it to be filled by somebody who has a year in the field of mining, I think you will have to concede is unusual. So perhaps you could further inform us of why this particular appointment was made. you've just described, or you've just made a plea for us to support the DMR in its transformational program. Could you explain how this was a transformational appointment? Thank you.
Honorable Nyambi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to raise this on the issue that has been raised by Honorable Lorima. I wonder why this issue is raised, or maybe it's because of the appointee is a woman. And also, I feel embarrassed because now we are on the 16 days of activism, where we said we have to take care of our women. But now we can see that this woman is dragged down, because now it's mentioned that she qualified. She has got all the qualifications that is required for the department. And also, this matter, the minister has said it is an administrative matter. And also, we talk about the transformation every day in our meeting to say we want to empower our women. Now, the department has tried to place one of our women in that position. Then we raise the concern. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I wish really to welcome the response from the Minister. What we really need, it was the question of response. And as we agreed in the last meeting that the Minister will come back and respond accordingly. Chair, he has done so now. Surely this matter needs to come to an end now. I don't think we need to pursue that particular one any further, because we have done what was supposed to be done, Minister. So we really welcome the report as it was requested, and therefore it can't hold us ransom. It's high time that we move and deal with our PC work as we're supposed to deal with, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I want to also welcome the response by the Minister. In his absence last week, we decided to await the Minister's return from his official trip abroad. We have been satisfied by the response, Honorable Chair, and I think we would want to put this matter to the House. The Minister always answers questions, motions and statements in the House, and if it ought to be, the Honorable Member is most welcome to interact with the Minister and get more clarity. It's not an item that is on our agenda for today, and we would like to proceed and look at the issues that have been put on the agenda. The response that was required from the Minister has been provided. But I want to support Honorable Nyambi on her input, Honorable Chair. You know, we always speak of transformation. We always look into empowering women, particularly in the mining sector. Here is a black woman that has been empowered and seen to a position, yet it comes under scrutiny and is questioned. That leaves a lot for us as a committee to look at, Honorable Chair. particularly when the minister has clearly said that the appointee has been in government and worked in the Northern Cape and in the Free State, and she is now within the ministry. It is not true, Honorable Chair, that she's just had 1 year's experience. We're speaking of an experienced, qualified person that has been working for government over some time now. And I think for me, this issue comes to closure with the input of the minister. And I would like us, Honorable Chair, like Honorable Beginini has requested, and I second that we move on and attend to the issues that are on our agenda for the day. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, when this issue was raised, I thought after the minister has given the answer, we won't go into it. We'll just accept the answer as it is, because if a person is capable and qualified for the job, and she's a woman for that matter, we have been raising these points that there's no transformation. We want to see women in senior positions. So I thought we won't even discuss it, we'll take it as it is, unless we as the members of this committee want to be administrators and politicians at the same time, of which it can be. So we support the minister on this issue, because if the minister could have left that woman, she could have gone to another cell, another department. So we need capable people in this department, as long as I trust what the minister is saying, that this woman will bring a positive input in the department. So I think we should leave this matter to rest, not discuss the appointment. It is not our prerogative. It is the administration prerogative to appoint. Thank you.
Okay, my fear is that we may not be addressing the real issue. My understanding was simple, which is what the minister is giving as an answer. Was or did the department follow the correct procedures and with the necessary requirements? And the answer, to the best of my knowledge, was that yes. Now, I'm trying to think now. I'm not going to say the minister must not respond if he wants to respond. I'm also running away from this thing that now I'm no longer the chair, I'm a mediator. I can't guide the meeting where it goes. I don't want to sound like a mediator again. But for me, as far as I can look at it, there is no dispute. Probably if there was a dispute or a matter that is an objection given, there is no objection given. Thirdly, I must say probably what will disadvantage Honorable Lorima or committee members, vice versa, is that there is no common understanding of the basis of the question, because the common understanding would have been were the proper and normal procedures followed, and if so, the requirements were also the correct ones. I'm not sure whether at the level of this committee we can then go and say, with the answer given, is it correct or not? But I don't want to close the matter on the side of the... I would have proposed also how probably the matter could be handled beyond that stage. But I'm not sure whether the minister wants to respond, so that, again, I don't sound like... not even a mediator. I was told I'm protecting. I don't want to sound like I protected. But let me see whether the minister wants to respond on the matter. But at the end of the day, honorable members, you must also understand one thing. When a matter is presented here, it is a matter for the committee, and the committee must take a decision. Okay.
No, Chair, thanks. I have said I will appreciate the support of the committee, work together with the committee. I want to repeat that. if there's any issue that that the committee wants to raise with me, I attend as much as I can, even the portfolio committees, because I want to give you first-hand information. It may be a bit problematic if this committee is going to do its oversight based on rumors. If any paper says this, then the minister has to come here and answer on the rumors. That will not be a support for the minister. That will not be a working together. If honorable member has an issue and he raises an issue with me, with all humility, I always attend to that issue, you know yourself. But if I am going to be defocused in terms of what the papers are saying about me every day, then that is another matter. That is not working together. All what I'm saying is, I'm also capable as a minister. This committee should have trust, or at least show some trust, that I would not take somebody here and put them here without following any procedures and so forth and so on. I have been in the leadership positions for some time myself. I know what it is required there. The requirements of somebody to be DDG, this lady has met all those requirements. And maybe just to say, I find it odd that we are even discussing somebody that has not been taken permanently to the position. I find it very odd. And what I was trying to say is that if there is a need to do changes in the department, this minister is going to come up with those changes. Properly qualified people with all the necessary requirements, that will happen. And as I've said, should the committee needs to know, I will finish the committee with the necessary information. I'm just seeking that we should work together and not cast aspersions on issues that are said by you on the papers or by me. If I have an issue, I'll come to you and say, I have this issue. You clarify, we move forward. If you have an issue with the department, I'm here almost every week. I make sure that I come, I hear what you are saying, and I respond as I've promised. Chair, I think I should stop there.
Honorable Lorima, for the last time, and we wrap up. Honorable Mandai. Yes.
Thanks for your assurance, Minister, that that you are both accessible and that you will play open cards on this appointment. I just want to reiterate that had you told us 3 weeks ago, when the matter first appeared before this committee, what you told us now, it could have gone away much quicker than it has. So I think certainly from my side, all I need is an assurance. Could you perhaps, just to conclude this matter, as the appointment process goes on, continue to play open cards with us and reveal to us the paperwork during the appointment process? And perhaps as a corollary to that, maybe you could tell us by when you want to complete this process to secure a permanent appointment.
Honorable Mandel.
Thank you, Chair. It's quite ironic, Honorable Chair, that we now wanting to see papers of appointments within the department. I don't remember ever asking for Baum Caesar's acting post, his appointment, or any of the other officials of the department. And again, is it because it's a black woman that suddenly we want paperwork? We want now to scrutinize the department because of a post, and that is an acting post, Honorable Chair. Obam Caesar is acting DG, yet we have never
questioned him of his qualifications or how he was appointed. I mean, there must be consistency in this. Then we might as well ask everyone who's acting in the department for all their paperwork. I had said earlier, Honorable Chair, that an answer has been provided by the minister. Unless there are cross violations in the appointment of the official, then I don't see this matter being a committee issue. We have business of the day that we ought to attend to, which is outlined in the agenda. This matter is not on our agenda. We've just, because the minister is here, afforded him an opportunity to give an answer to Honorable Lorimer, and I feel, Honorable Chair, through your guidance, we would like to proceed. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Members. Let me first deal with this first issue. Now, if there is any person to be blamed, then it must be the Chair and the committee. We didn't allow the minister to respond on that day. And I ruled that because the minister had come for another reason in the committee. Having came for another reason, the letter was saying he must be summoned to come to the committee. We even had looked at the wording, and we said he will have to come to the not summoned, be invited to the committee in order to give a response on the, at that time. So I think it will be unfair to create an impression that 3 weeks ago or so, the minister refused to make that. If there is someone who must be blamed, then by the ruling is from the Chair. We didn't allow the minister to respond because the purpose on that day was not meant for that. I think it's just a correct thing. The second thing, Honorable Members, is that if we were to correct issues, or we want to manage issues as a committee for committee work, I always say I prefer a matter of principle. Since I've been here, I don't know how many people have been, with due respect, Minister, you probably were not even there. I only met this man. This man was still permanent where he was, Ubabu Msiza. I don't know how many of them, when I arrived, were acting. Some of them were acting even outside where they were. Maybe Msiza is better. It's an upward mobility in terms of acting. There were many positions that they were acting, people were not taken directly. So I think for me, if we were to deal with the issue, we must deal with the issue in the context of how do we see the transformation and to what extent that transformation strengthened the work that is supposed to be done by the department, specifically around the establishment, creation of stability, which is the basis we said, Honorable Minister, I think it was in your absence, I think also we must be open ourselves as a committee, which we said, for an example, the duration that you would have had with the absence, we said, we would have hoped now we are moving towards creating a permanent structure of the department. So I thought, to me, the only way we can assist is to then say, can you speed up the process of doing 1, 2, 3? We should want to see a department, because our view was that in the case someone is acting for a certain period of time, that person when is acting does not have confidence. So whether we will have an issue with one person, it's gonna, no, we didn't say, don't say, that one, no. I can see, no, let me protect Honorable Lucius. it was not about him. I can guarantee you, he gave us also his assurance. It was on the BRRR submissions, don't worry. So I think, Honorable Members, let's agree, but I think one of the things to me that I'm honest, we must do as a committee, all members are allowed, like the minister says, if I feel there is an issue, I'm allowed to write questions to the minister. In the event there is a concrete matter, then the matter can be brought for the attention of the committee. Let the committee deliberate on the matter, and then take a decision whether it wants to make that issue an item of the committee. I think that is how the committee must handle itself in future. Can we then move on to the next issue, which is the matter of the presentation by the department on the polluter pays principle? And having said that, we will have to excuse Honorable Mandela to go to the meeting. We are in this crisis because of Inkosi, but actually, we don't say that. He's a recipient of the memorandum. Now, that's the petition. Now, he has to go and make sure that he accounts and make sure that the petition moves. Is the petition which is handled primarily by the International Relations Portfolio Committee with a multitude of other committees that are affected by the petition and delivered by the Palestinian National Coalition for Palestine, yes. So Honorable Mandela will be attending there on behalf of the committee. Can we then give in to the minister and his team? Thank you very much.
Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, the acting DG and officials from the department, ladies and gentlemen, members of the media, good morning. As a department, we welcome the opportunity to engage with the Portfolio Committee regularly on matters relating to sustainable development within the mining sector. Let me begin by informing honorable members that the plenary of the Kimberley Process Certification Scheme has endorsed South Africa as the new chair of its working group on monitoring. This is significant, and I hope the media in here will capture this as good news, and at least we have a balance of what the department does well and what the department does not do well. This is significant as it is the first time that this working group is being chaired by a country outside EU. The working group monitors implementation of the Kimberley Process Certification Scheme by participants and is responsible for the peer review mechanism. Our neighbor Botswana has been also endorsed as the deputy chair. The chairpersonship will be for a period of 3 years, commencing in January 2017. And we'll share with this committee once we have appointed that chairperson so that everybody knows. On the topic for discussion today, South Africa has a long history of formalized mining in excess of a century. Yet prior to this democratic dispensation, there was no legislation compelling the mine to remedy pollution emanating from mining activities. The Mines and Works Act of 1956 introduced a requirement to install fencing around a mining area upon closure of the mine. However, there was a conspicuous absence of mine environmental legislation and recognition of incremental state liability. The Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act of 2002 effectively introduced a sustainable approach to the development of mineral and petroleum resources in South Africa, in line with the Constitution. Furthermore, government promulgated the National Environment Management Act to provide for cooperative environmental governance by establishing principles for the decision-making on matters affecting the environment. Both the MPRDA and NEMA sought to effectively address all mining environmental issues with one of its key objectives being to give effect to the environmental right, as contained in Section 24 of the Constitution. Recently, my department, together with Department of Environmental Affairs, as well as Water and Sanitation, amended the respective legislation to give effect to the one environmental system. In addition, the amendment process gave effect to the promulgation of new regulations that are inclusive of financial provisioning regulations. The implementation of the aforementioned legislation, together with the respective regulations, ensures the continual realization of the polluter pays principle. Honorable members, these are but some of the steps we have taken to deal decisively with the issue pertaining to the implementation of polluter pays principle to prevent and minimize environmental degradation and ensure that the cost of remedying environmental pollution is paid by those responsible for harming the environment. The department will now take members through a presentation which outlines how the polluter pays principle is applied. We look forward to your collective wisdom in assisting us to make an even greater progress to properly implement this principle. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. Then, Babu Msuza.
As long as Honorable Minister.
Let me say, if there's something, congratulations on your bringing in Indondo of being the chair. That's good news for the country. Thank you very much on that one. Babu Msuza?
I expected that my colleague, Honorable Laurie Moore, would also congratulate us on this matter.
Thank you, Honorable Minister, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, colleagues, media. Good morning. As the Minister highlighted, we'll be doing a presentation on the implementation of the polluter pays principle in the mining sector. The presentation will be done by our Head of Environmental Management, Mr. Andresa Mwatse. Mr. Mwatse.
Okay, I always make the mistake, but continue. I've seen your face, oh, I don't know how many times now, instead of asking you, I just get worried of not seeing you than being worried of seeing you. But it's okay. That's why I don't even ask your delegation, because it's always familiar faces that I know.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, and DG, good morning. I'll be taking you through the following, the polluter pays principle, as requested by the committee, the solution to pave way for the implementation of the polluter pays principle, the one environmental system, monitoring and enforcement of the polluter pays principle, the financial provision regulations, as well as the challenges in the development of these regulations to date. Honorable Chair, the Minister has outlined the history of mining in South Africa, and it is very evident from the remarks by the Minister that there has been absence of mine environmental legislation and also lack of coordination amongst the pieces of legislation in South Africa, which are implemented by respective government departments. Honorable Chair, it is evident also that as a result of this absence of mine environmental management legislation previously, as well as lack of coordination, we as a country has inherited a liability, a significant liability, of what one would call derelict and ownerless mine sites. in the country. Now, these derelict and ownerless mine sites, as members would know, are classified in several categories, but very important, they are classified as hazardous, and some of these sites are said to be located at unsafe places within or near to our communities. They include, amongst others, as members would know, the hazardous asbestos sites throughout the country. Not only, honorable members, do we as a country experience the problem of derelict and ownerless mines, but we have inherited the challenge of acid mine drainage. And members would be aware of what is actually happening in the Vest Basin, because the bulk of your acid mine drainage is experienced within the Vest Basin. Now, the next slide indicates the spread of the derelict and ownerless mines. Now, in order to address this challenge, as a department, one of the things which we had to do was to develop an inventory of these sites throughout the country and also verify this. This was guided by the national strategy which the department had developed to address this. The next slide then explains the prioritization which the department had to do to ensure implementation of the effective rehabilitation of these sites. You will note, members, that we have high priority which we are currently working on, rehabilitating, but the process will be going ahead to ensure that all of the sites which are actually posing a challenge to our people, especially communities, are addressed. The polluter pays principle. Members would also know that the definition of the polluter pays principle is defined by the National Environmental Management Act. And basically the definition attempts to ensure that the responsibility within the value chain of any commodity or process is assigned to the right holder or the owner. And to ensure that, very important, that throughout the value chain of this community commodity or the product, the right holder or the owner ensures prevention, minimization, and control of impacts or potential impacts. Now, having noted what is defined by the polluter pays principle, and what also is enshrined within Section 24 of the Bill of Rights, which requires government to ensure that our people are protected or they live in an environment which is safe at all times, then the department in 2002 to 2011 underwent a process together with other government departments to ensure that there is an integrated process to manage the challenges of, amongst others, your derelict and ownerless mine, the acid mine drainage, and so on. And to this end, the primary legislation, that is your Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act, was then had to go through an amendment process to give effect to what we call one environmental system. Now, members would know also that right now as we speak, the MPRDA, your National Environmental Management Act, and your National Water Act have been going through the process of amendments. And we are grateful that the process as we speak right now, especially with this reference to the MPRDA, is more or less near its completion. Not only are the legislations being amended, but also there are some regulations which are currently right now being promulgated, inclusive of the financial provision regulation, which I will be taking the members through. Now, in order to ensure that one environmental system is realized, the Department of Mineral Resources, together with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Water Affairs, established an interdepartmental project implementation committee, which would ensure that there is an effective implementation and monitoring of the one environmental system. The terms of reference, honorable members, of this IPIC include, amongst others, a comprehensive rehabilitation program. Further on, the IPIC, this committee, has some task teams which continuously meet to address issues related to, amongst others, compliance enforcement. We talk to issues of discussion today. Now, in order further for this department to be able to ensure that there is effective implementation of the polluter pays principle, there was a need, and there is a need, to ensure that there is capacity within the department. And that includes empowering the officials, and for that, the department has entered into a contract with the University of Pretoria. And so far, our officials have been going through a training program, and there has been a marked improvement in terms of the execution, especially with reference to the compliance and enforcement. Honourable members, you will note in the next slide, in this slide, that there have been several inspections which I wanted to make mention to honourable members. In the 2015-2016 financial year, we have carried out as a department 1,889 verification inspections. We have issued 127 notices to right holders who did not comply with the financial provision regulations. And as a result of these inspections and notices, there has been a marked level of reduction in state environmental liability. And there is a sense of increased level of responsibility from the right holders or owners of these sites. Next slide. This slide then attempts to indicate to members the progress which the department has done with respect to rehabilitation of the derelict and ownerless mines. And mainly, like I've already indicated, the department is involved with the rehabilitation of asbestos sites. You have on the left side of the slide the before, and on the right side the after, which indicates what the department has done. And we are grateful that with the assistance of the SOEs who have been assisting us in this regard, both Council for Geoscience and MINTEC, the work has been successfully completed. And it is continuing. In this slide, I have indicated, honourable members, that not only are the derelict and ownerless mines a challenge in the country, but also the issue of acid mine drainage. To date, the department had to conduct, as a part of the pilot program, to ensure ingress control in the country, the department rehabilitated the Florida Canal, and members would know on the left side of the slide what it looked like before, and what on the right, what it looks like right now. The level of acid mine drainage within the Florida area has been addressed significantly, and it is the intention of this department to ensure that in the years to come, that there should be increased level of ingress control which would be conducted by the department. The next slide indicates the promotion of mining, specifically of what one would call legacy dams. Members would know what we found, we normally find, especially in your Gauteng areas. And these are some of the sites which we inherited. what one would call, like I said, your legacy dams. And the department is involved with the rehabilitation of some of these sites, and we are proud that the work is going continuing as expected. Further on, with the existing mines or operational mines, in terms of the MPRDA, mine owners or right holders are expected to conduct what we call concurrent rehabilitation, and this slide attempts to indicate to you what is being done to ensure that the right holders have to ensure that the, like the polluter pays principle indicates, that they take responsibility throughout the value chain of the commodity they mine. And the next slide also indicates the very same process, which basically happens within your coal environment. There's a concurrent rehabilitation. The financial provision regulations. Now, it was necessary that as part of one environmental system, that the financial provision regulations be amended to ensure effective and closing up of the gaps which we had experienced prior to one environmental system or in the period which the minister has indicated. And as a result of that, the department, specifically the Department of Environmental Affairs, in consultation with ourselves, DMR, then developed the financial provision regulations which were promulgated in November 2015. Now, these regulations ensured that there is rehabilitation and remediation, that at the time of decommissioning or closure of the mines or mine sites, it be prospecting, exploration, mining or production operations, there is sufficient amount of money to ensure that the state does not then incur liability like we find with the derelict and the ownerless mines at the present moment. And further on, to ensure that those challenges, especially like your acid mine drainage as we experience in the country right now, what we call latent and residual environmental impacts, which may be realized in the course of time, are provided for by the right holders. And this is but part of what one would call polluter pays principle. But obviously, in trying to address the challenges of the past with respect to your financial provision regulations, what we have noted as government is that there is a need to re-look at some of these clauses within the financial provision regulations. And it was evident, therefore, that as we consult with the industry and other stakeholders, that there were challenges with respect to misalignment with Income Tax Act. There were issues related to limitations of the Trust Act, issues related to care and maintenance. And for that, we as government, that is our DMR, together with the DIA and National Treasury, are in the process of amending these regulations to ensure that they are aligned with the Income Tax Act, that the issues and challenges which are related to the trust funds are addressed. And it is planned that the transitional period will now be extended by a period of 24 months. That's in short what one would say, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, I also agree with the service. We're very precise, very quick. Honorable Mokoena, Honorable Lorima, Honorable Mopolo,
Azisha Bamkwe. Welcome, by the way. Welcome. Not I did. You welcome, Honorable Mafolo. No, and welcome, Honorable Matlala. At least, let me leave it.
Thank you, Chair.
You know, when Honorable Matlala is quiet, don't even try and attempt to make him even smile. So it's better when he's keeping even with an angry face. Yeah. Okay, Bumkwe.
Thank you, Chair. I didn't realize the amount of mines we have that are derelict in Olenes. This picture is shocking. It's just worth noting. And then, I was just wondering, retrospectively, what do we do then with communities that have been affected by pollution over the 130 years odd of pollution that especially townships have experienced in Secunda, Mbalentle, in Sasolburg, Zamdela, and there was no mention of the gold mines pollution in your report, which I read somewhere that it's probably the biggest contributor to pollution in this country. I know that in the Free State that it's been a huge problem for years. So I just wanted to know what do we do then retrospectively in terms of that. And there was a report in I think by Harvard. I think I read also that the department was not aware of that report by Harvard that spoke specifically of the gold mine drainage. And then also in Secunda, there was an interesting thing that happened there where Sasol they reported that there was some poisonous drainage in the river that runs through Mbalentle. And then instead of cleaning the water, there was then a directive to the municipality to release more water into the river so as to dilute the water instead of cleaning it. So I wanted to know, like, what do we do in these cases? I mean, these are cases that have happened over years and years and years and years and years. And the Act is only coming into actual effect now. So what do we do with those retrospective cases? Thanks, Chair.
You do mention that the Department of Water and Sanitation have not published their regulations yet. Do you have an idea of when that's going to happen? And how has their failure to do so affected the process, if at all? This is a highly technical area for me, so I've got quite a lot of questions. Does the DMR have a plan or a template for checking the adequacy of financial provision of a particular mine? And which mines is it prioritizing to check up on the soundness of their financial provisions? It would be interesting to know who does that checking up. I mean, this is a very complicated area. Do you use outside experts, or does the department have sufficient expertise? Since December 2014, has the DMR found any mining companies that don't have adequate financial provisions? And if so, what are you doing about it?
Does the DMR have a plan for monitoring mining companies' disclosure of their financial provision as required by the new regulations and enforcement action if companies don't publish their financial provisions on their websites or wherever else you require them to publish them? What happens about mine rehabilitation funds that were established prior to 2014? There's a whole sort of transitional issue here, which I'm not sure that I really understand. Does it mean that the new regulations will never apply to some mines? Or is there a way of getting all of them into the new system? Has the minister yet exercised his powers in terms of the regulations to instruct a mining rights holder to adjust financial provisions? And if so, what were the circumstances under which the minister exercised his powers? So an example there would be very, very useful. And is the DMR receiving at the moment audit reports from any rights holders? What is the position in that respect? And I also don't understand the whole issue of concurrent rehabilitation. Could you just explain how you intend that that gets funded? Who decides that a mine needs to do concurrent rehabilitation? How does that get funded? Can people draw from their funds, or do they have to provide additional financing to do that? And maybe you could give us an idea of how many mines are concurrently rehabilitating. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation. My question is on slide 4, but even if you don't give us the answer now, we just see that you told us about the verified sites. What I want to know is, where are these sites? Can you, even if you don't give us, but can you next time give us where are these sites? Because we want to know. We can't just say these sites are verified, not knowing the place, the province, whatever. And then on prioritized sites, what criteria do you use to identify this as a high priority? And the reasons to say this is a high priority site. The other question is, out of 1,889 verifications inspection, does it mean that 127, does it come from that 1,889? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members will respond together with also the CFO. Will also touch on the issues on what the department has been doing in some of the areas that have been raised by Honourable Lorim as well. But just to introduce, and we fully agree, Honourable Mokoena, it is a significant number of the derelict and owners' mines. And as Mr. Muwatse has indicated, mainly you'll find that they have been asbestos mines, open shafts and holes in the Gauteng area. There are some coal mines as well. Old coal mines, some of them have been burning, including TNDB. TNDB is an old mine as you come from Pretoria and enter Emalahleni from Highveld on your left-hand side. You'll actually see after there's a complex, there's a place now it's been remined. The department has encouraged that it should be remined because it was burning. There was what we call spontaneous combustion that was happening at that time. So in such instances, which especially those that affect communities directly, we encourage that we must find a way of reminding them if we can, or may safeguard them. And it also touches on what Honorable Mufolo has been, how do we prioritize these mines? We prioritize these mines based on the significant risk that they might have on the communities, especially the neighboring communities. We've done asbestos. We've actually done asbestos mines, especially in the Northern Cape and some parts of Mpumalanga, because they were in close proximity to communities, or they were in close proximity to the rivers, streams, which will flow ultimately to communities and the farming area. So we prioritize them based on that mainly, to prevent harm on the human aspect, and obviously to protect the environment, including the water stream. Now, in terms of also the question, I hope it also addresses what do we do, Honorable Mokoena, to protect the communities. That's how we prioritize them. We start with those that are high risk to communities, and we respond to those. With the gold mines, Mr. Mwazi on his presentation also highlighted there's a slide, I think it's on slide where there's a dam. It's on slide 14. If you can refer to slide 14. Slide 14 basically shows a slime, what we call a slime dam, or an old residue deposit. It's part of a derelict and onerous mine. I've indicated when we were presenting on illegal mining the last time that if you drive around the major highways of Gauteng and some parts of the Free State and Northwest, especially in the Klerksdorp area, you'll see these huge slime dams. There's a difference between a slime dam and a normal dam, a rock dam. You'll actually see, and the slime dam, the problem with the slime dam is if it has cyanide and it runs into the stream, then it has a significant health impact on humans and also the farming community. So, and hence Mr. Mwazi was saying that we encourage remining of these slime dams themselves. Some of the slime dams, because of the poor sort of technology of processing the gold at that time, you know, there's still some gold left. So they are viable for mining. So we encourage mining of those. I think that's the first priority, to encourage our mining. But secondly, we also encourage, where possible, vegetation of those slime dams. Because as you'll know, especially within the Soweto area, you'll see in August time, when there's wind, sometimes there's a lot of dust. So we also encourage that in the meantime, there must be vegetation. You'll see some of them, there's vegetation, or there's plants or the trees that have been put on them. But I think for us, the first bite is mining. We have to encourage mining. In the Free State area, some of them, especially the rock dams now, they are being used as crushers. There are companies that will come and then they remind them, they'll crush them. Some of this is being used for infrastructure build and road infrastructure as well. So we do encourage that to happen. And there's also a government task team that is looking at the water element of it, of these slime dams, and also the old gold mines. They are looking at there's plans that have been considered, especially through the water and sanitation department, for treatment in the Gauteng area, and it's also happening in the coal sector in the Mpumalanga area, where one of the companies is retreating underground water, which might be acidic, and then they treat it first before they put it in the stream, or they give it to the municipality for use again, which is palatable as well. So I think we take that approach on that. On the Harvard report, we've heard that there was this report, but we will have to look at that report, because we have not been directly consulted as a department on that particular report. But safe to say that we have been aware of these risks that these dams are posing to the affected communities, and we're working together with the other departments to deal with the challenges. And the Secunda, the concerns regarding the Secunda, the poisoned water, I think we'll have to get further information on the Romogwena, and then we can follow up and investigate the matter and see how we can help on that. And Honorable Lodoma, I think on the financial, on what do we do as a department, I'll give Mr. Mwete and Ms. Singo an opportunity to respond to those questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We are in consultation, Honorable Chair, with the Department of Water and Sanitation. The department is working on the comments with reference to the regulations pertaining to water to ensure one environmental system. As to the timelines on this, I will not be in the position to provide that at the present moment, Honorable Chair. The second question relates to the template. Yes, indeed, the department does have a template of the derelict and ownerless mines. Like I indicated, one of the responsibilities which the department had to do was to conduct an inventory. And an inventory also looks into the prioritization. If I could also just deal with the issue of the prioritization, although the DG has already indicated. The prioritization was mainly to assist us, to guide us in terms of what needs to be done now as opposed to some years to come. And amongst others, members would know the challenges which our communities are experiencing with what one would call hazardous sites. Those sites from which our communities actually may experience serious medical conditions or diseases, or may actually also experience some safety challenges. And we have asbestos sites at the present moment, which are a priority amongst others. The adequacy of the sites, I will expect one of the regional members to respond to this. But they are the ones who are actually looking into that. Concurrent rehabilitation. In terms of the MPRDA, as well as the financial provision regulation, the current one, it is expected that for those impacts which are currently being experienced in the operational mines, the right holder or the mines takes full responsibility for that. Concurrent rehabilitation, therefore, speaks to those impacts specifically which are currently experienced by the mines at the present moment. Yes, they are being funded from the costs. In other words, the mines have to generate debt. The financial provision is meant to address those challenges which are only going to be experienced later, maybe at the time of closure, or something like that. I think I'll leave that to other members.
Thanks, honorable members. Thank you, Chairperson. With financial provision, you will remember that we have got different types of financial provision. The one where companies keep the trust themselves, the one where the department keeps the trust and guarantees. So somewhere last year, we saw a gap that although regional offices follow up on this financial provisions, they in line with their works programs, they visit the sites and receive annual reports from mining companies, and then they evaluate and to check the adequacy of the liabilities. We felt that we needed a consolidated view so that at national level we can have consolidated view of all the provinces. And then we registered a project where we are doing an integrated, we have a template where we integrate all the financial provisions. The regional managers send us their report on a monthly basis for the different types of guarantees. And it's a project that is ongoing. Our next step will be again to be able to select from at a national level certain mines that we can audit and all that. But there is an integrated register and it's work in progress to try and improve on it. Thanks.
Honourable Chair, but just to also to add from what the colleagues have touched on concurrent rehabilitation, I think it's also important to explain and understand this concept to which specific minds that it can be applicable to easily. So you find that most of the time, because obviously if we issue a mining right, the law requires that there must be what we call an EMP or an environmental management plan or program on how you take back the land back to its original status, you know, or to protect the land and also the humans who might be affected by mining. Concurrent rehabilitation can easily be done with open cast coal mines mainly, as Mr. Moate has shown in the presentation. In other words, as you mine, you find a way of rehabilitating. It's easy to do that with those type of mines, open cast coal mines. Not all open cast mines, specific open cast mines or open pit mines. Sometimes you cannot do it, for instance, with a quarry. You know, you can't, because the quarry is there, they don't move. Open cast coal mine, you move from one point to the other, removing the overburden and then the coal seam, and then you can close back to the, so it's easy for you to do it, you know, compared to the gold mines, underground gold mines and the underground coal mines. But in the meantime, also, as a form of rehabilitation, what you do with the underground mines is to manage the aspect of the water flow, so that you don't affect also the groundwater. And that's how you do that as well, is how you design your mine. You know, one of the challenges that we've experienced in the past, and hence I was emphasizing on the matter of TNDB, Transvaal and Delgoa Bay Colliery, is that it experienced a spontaneous combustion, that is where coal just burns itself after contact with oxygen. We call it spontaneous combustion. It started to burn. It was a shallow mine, and it affected the water flow, and it affected the surface area. It collapsed, you know. So if you don't design your mine accordingly, leaving adequate size pillars, sometimes that happens. You have that collapse, and it affects everything. So the mine design is also important in all the issues of environmental management. And as you, because some of the mines, they mine them per panel or by section. So it's deliberate, so that you can also be, obviously, protect health and safety by the issues of environment, including the issue of water, you know. In a coal mine, you'll have different sections subdivided by pillars, so that once you finish this section, you can close it off, and you control the water that is in. So there's different forms of rehabilitation, but concurrent, as I indicated, it's much easier done with the open cast mines, some of the open cast mines, than the underground gold and platinum mines, Honourable Members. Thank you. Sorry, Honourable Chair, I think there's another question that you may have.
Yeah, sorry, Chairperson, I just forgot to emphasize something on the rehabilitation. We, in terms of the Act, the mining companies must submit audited annual financial statements to the department. The mining companies has a responsibility in terms of the accounting framework to disclose their liability. So the audited financial statement indicate exactly how much they must make available for the rehabilitation. And our people then, when they get those annual financial statements, assess what has been submitted. So I just wanted to clarify that as well. Thanks.
No, Chair, okay, so the answer suffices, except that it doesn't deal with the retrospect aspect. What happens to those communities that have been affected in the past? How do we repay or compensate, or what is the stance of government on and it's and there's a lot that there has been a lot of transgressions from mining companies. So what do we do in terms of those? And then, if you'll bear with me, Che, you know this thing of nationalization of mines is quite profound, right? Because what China has done is that you got your primary mines, and then you've got your second tier and your third tier. And what they've done is they've created a government-owned company called Zhaojin. I think it's Zhaojin Mining. And what it does is it takes care of these mined areas, the ones that need to be re-mined and sort of. But because China owns 117 companies in all sectors, what it also owns is a company that rehabilitates. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is because, Mr. Mseza, you keep saying we encourage. And I don't know if encouraging is enough to deal with this extremely serious problem that we have, and therefore China is able to deal with it directly from a government capacitated perspective, and this is and perhaps, but it's an intellectual discussion, because this dispensation is not going to listen to this argument. But what I would encourage, though, is that government takes a more proactive approach, a more stick approach, instead of encouraging, so that we're able to deal. Sasol has been able to get away with murder in that Mbalentle and Secunda areas. It has got away with serious murder with our people there, and it's sad because in Sasol, for instance, in the townships, that's where you see pollution happening in the air, in the water, everywhere else. And in the white suburbs, there's nothing. And it's an apartheid legacy that we have lived with over time. So how do we compensate our people in that respect? The Harvard report, it came out in March. So I'm surprised you haven't seen it still. but thank you very much. Thanks, Chair.
We can see who thought it was a Kronstadt. Not thought it was a Mlaz. Not thought it was a Soweto. It's not an intellectual debate, it's an ideological debate. Now, I'm sure you and Honorable Lorima and Honorable Matlale Fuetu, say after this committee meeting, you must sit and resolve that ideology. We'll come back even tomorrow, you will not have agreed. So why do you want to put officials in a corner that they that no, that's why I'm saying it's an ideological debate. But also I think what is important probably is to engage, because the issue is that we can't ignore the historical effects of where we come from and the interventions that are supposed to be made from time to time. But we will come back to that issue. Except to say, I'm sure Babu Mseza will tell you that, that the issue of a state mining company exists. The issue of a wing on rehabilitation under the auspices and authority of the state exist. The question probably that China might have an advantage on is the magnitude of the problem, because China never faced high level of desegregation. Whether we like it or not, we can't be in denial. The mineral wealth of this country was built at the back of the sufferings of the black majority in this country. We can't run away from that. It's historical. And therefore, dealing with those effects, it's something that exists. I'm sure you can go anywhere. You will go probably even in many of the areas. Your high-intensity manufacturing activities, where there's high levels of pollution, will always, by proximity, be where your urban reserves, if one were to use such a thing. So that's why I'm saying it's a very serious high-tech ideological debate, but not just for the sake of tautology, but for the sake of saying, how do you do? So we may, from time to time, have to refresh our minds, except to say probably China may not be a good example in the South African context in terms of the high levels of labor exploitations, because it can do that to some degree. Obviously, there are offsets. Some will argue and say there are offsets, but it's not a good example. Others will tell you, if you go to the labor movement and make an example about China, then I'm sure you won't get out of that crowd if you say they must go that route. But it's a high intense discussion that probably, and I think we should be able to welcome it as a committee in one way, that find a way as a committee to begin to engage on that issue.
No, Chair, just to add there, you know, if China is a bad idea, we can go South Korea, Russia, those are very good ideas.
Thank you. We'll come. Honorable Lorim.
Without getting into the issue, Mr. Chair, I was interested that you found that ideology and intellectualism were mutually exclusive. But anyway. Okay. I don't think I got an answer to the question about how many mines don't currently have adequate financial provision. Can you clarify that for me? And also the question of addressing the transitional arrangements for mines which originally didn't have adequate financial position. How do you do that? Now, back to concurrent rehabilitation. From the mine's point of view, why would it do concurrent rehabilitation if it can just wait till the end and then let the fund pay for it? Why would they want to fund it out of their current expenditure? How does that work? And then if concurrent rehabilitation is supposed to be funded from operational expenditure, can you comment on cases where rehabilitation funds have been opened up for concurrent rehabilitation? How often does it happen? In order for it to happen, what criteria have to be met, and what process would be followed?
Honourable Chair, thank you for those questions, and indeed we also have our mineral regulation colleagues who will assist with their question in terms of the further questions on concurrent rehabilitation, and indeed Honourable Chairperson on the matter of SOMCO and also the MINTEC and CGS, they are helping us in terms of rehabilitation and mining. And I will just also answer once again, if there's further information on SASOL that we can look at those cases, please, Honorable Mokoena will appreciate it, and we'll look at it, and we'll follow up and finally make sure that we protect. But safe to say once again that we do agree with the sentiments that have been shared, that the legacy of mining unfortunately had a huge impact on our people, and we cannot run away. We can really not run away from that. And hence, given the resources that we have as government or as a department currently, we strive to ensure that we prioritize the high-risk areas. Some of the areas, and mainly on asbestos as well, there's areas where we are working to find a way of removing, because some of the houses have been built over sites with asbestos, and that have a significant impact on the communities. asbestos mines have been decommissioned some time ago because of the hazardous nature of that. So we are working together with their respective departments to try and find a way we remove them there. In terms of compensation as well, where there is a need for that to happen, we work together with their respective. But we can't run away, you know, from the legacy challenges that we are facing. But also we must admit that an ideal situation for us is for us to have adequate funds provided for us to continuously and quicker do the work, And now on encouraging mining, I think for me it was important to do that, to emphasize on that, because, you know, the slime dams or the residue deposits, the challenge is you'll have to determine the quantity of gold which is on that residue deposit. And it's very, you know, it's not significant, to be honest. And that's why most of the operators, they take advantage of the current favorable commodity gold price to prioritize which of them are going to be processed, reprocessed, you know. So I think there's those dynamics, Honorable Mokoena, with that. But it not only includes the slime dams, but it also includes some of the old coal dumps that have been left there. Some of them are being remined as and being processed and also being used for electricity, for instance. So we do work together with the companies to deal with it. On the other questions, I'll give my colleague an opportunity to respond to Mr. Aaron Karibe.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, DG, everyone. On the issue of how the transitional arrangements will affect the existing holders, I need to highlight that the financial provision regulation has always been in existence prior to the new financial provision regulation. So, in a way, holders have always been required to annually revise the financial provision, and the methods are not necessarily changing. It is the same method that were in existence under the MPRDA that are now being moved into the new financial approach just to align with the one environmental system that is introduced in NEMA. So the existing holders will not be exonerated. Just to state that in respect of additional requirements that are being introduced by the new regulations, they will have to adjust. But it does not affect the issue of adequacy of financial provision and their obligations with regard to annual revising, and it will not exonerate them from liabilities. And then on the issue of operational costs versus financial provision and how they should be utilized in the circumstances. One, financial provision is exclusively required to ensure that the state is not exposed to any risk of inheriting liabilities that are caused by holders. So as part of operational costs, each holder is required to have a budget to actually take care of their environmental obligations. But there are circumstances, for instance, such as liquidation or sequestration that may arise. And that is when the financial provision can be utilized by the state to address either pollution or any form of environmental damage or degradation that may arise from those circumstances. But financial provision cannot be utilized to address obligations of the holder as and when they're still a holder and they're undertaking, unless if there are extreme circumstances. Actually, it's provided for under MPRDA that there are circumstances when financial provision can be utilized if it necessitates and the financial provision is not adequate to do so. But ordinarily, operational costs are to be used by the holders. And lastly, with regard to what is done whenever holders are found to not have adequate financial provisions. Previously, the department utilized Section 93 of the MPRDA, and right now, there are compliance notices to be issued to ensure that as and when every holder is found to have any shortfall in financial provision, they are ordered to do so, and that mechanism has worked effectively to ensure that as and when there is a shortfall identified, the holders can provide for the shortfall or the difference that is determined. Thank you.
How many mines then, and I'm not clear on this, how many mines do not currently have adequate financial provision? I mean, give me a rough number or a rough percentage. I'd just like to know that. So the fund can be accessed then in exceptional circumstances. How often does that happen? Give you the date. It was in May this year. Fifth of May, permission was given to the Koornfontein mine to access its rehabilitation fund. Can you explain why that permission was given? Did the minister sign off on it? What rehabilitation work is being done at the Koornfontein mine? And how much of that rehabilitation fund has been spent and remains unspent?
Thank you, Chair. No, I wanted to know if the allocation of monies that are for rehabilitation and these other issues, are they? Are they considering the size of the community that it's dealing with? What defines how much should be allocated? Is the one question, and then the other is just an input, Chair. That. You know, we're having these ideological discussions, and I think maybe sometimes what we should do is meet as a committee without the department here, so that we can thresh out some of these ideological issues. It's an interesting thing, you know, in Brazil, which is another interesting example of how they dealt with this issue of small mines and pollution is that during the time of Bolsa Familia, where they were literally giving out money to people, what government also did is to buy equipment for the mining industry and other industries to help these companies to deal with things like, for instance, mining at a small scale, or rehabilitating, or dealing with pollution, and so on and so forth. So people would go to government to get equipment so that they can then, or government would then give tasks directly, because government tried to capacitate itself. It's just an idea, because I'm worried at the pace at which we're dealing with the issue, because can people continue being affected? Thanks.
We'll give you that time. We'll give you that chance. But the point I was raising was that if we look in the totality, that's what we'll have to deal with. But also understand the social system that you are dealing with, but also having a historical understanding of where we come from to be where we are, because we may not be moving from the same level. But let's just say we will have to, I don't think we should say the department should not be there, because they should also benefit from that particular discussion. It may not necessarily be a matter that requires the department to deal in the form of a presentation. It could be a general engagement on how best to deal with these issues. And I think in dealing with that issue, we should also not take away the recent discussion we have had about the crisis of illegal mining as just one of the overlapping experiences that we are having. So I'm just saying, we'll see how do we formulate or locate that particular issue. Honor, Honorable Lorima will answer, especially on the one issue that he seems to be insisting on the number or the rough estimate on the number of mines that don't have the required financial muscle. Babu Mses.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Member. I think if we may, we don't have the exact figure right now on the number, but we are just being careful, especially in the public space, to give an error estimate on numbers. I think we can provide the number to the other honourable members or to the committee. But safe to say that, it's also important to highlight the fact that also changes depending on different circumstances. For instance, when an applicant applies for a mining right or a prospecting right, there will be a requirement that a certain at that particular point in time before a right is issued, a certain a provision should be made available. But as mining starts, that figure changes as well. So I think we will respond, but it's important for us to clarify that particular element as well. It might change as time goes by. Now, on the second question that Honourable Lerma have referred to, and I think it's going back to the issue of concurrent rehabilitation, and you've referred to, I think, Korenfontein mine. Besides Korenfontein mine, there are mines that also apply time and again to, in terms of the law, they can do that to do concurrent rehabilitation, and we do provide where necessary if we are comfortable that the purpose is to ensure that there is that concurrent rehabilitation that is happening, then we do grant approval for that to happen. But I also give my colleagues an opportunity to respond further on the matter. Mr. Karibe.
Thanks, DG. I just wanted to emphasize that the circumstances to be, amongst others, you would consider the extent to which, if no measures are put in place, that might pose excessive environmental damage, pollution, for instance, how much that can pose a risk to the health and well-being of people, and if indeed there are no operational budget, there's no operational budget that can address that. Under those circumstances, the financial provision can be utilized for that. And on the other aspect of how we determine that, there's a quantum and template that is determined, that has been put in place by the department, that is utilized to determine the amount that would be required for both premature closure, should that operation cease to exist at that point in time, how much would be required, as well as the amount required for the final closure of the mine at the very end. There's a template that addresses such issues. But so that specific case which you referred to, I think we can revert back to you on the circumstances that warranted that the financial provision be utilized under the circumstances. But as a matter of principle, if the circumstances warrant that measures be put in place at that point in time, the department can consider that, although ordinarily the operational cost budget should be utilized.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, honorable members, can we, in that note, I think let's just agree that not necessarily you, Babu Mseza, not also meaning that we're excluding you, in a broader sense and in a bigger scheme of things, I think we live to find a way on our best as a way of inputting, but also making a positive contribution on how best do we think some of these issues require to be handled. Also noting the fact that what becomes complex in this process is that by legislative responsibilities, it's not something that you could say is solely a responsibility by authority of one department. There is this overlap of powers, different on different areas of legislative responsibilities, which to some degree, as it continues to happen, I must say, even amongst ourselves here, we may not, if we have not encountered those things, in most cases, we have the, some they call us the culprits, who are seen as those who are being monitored, rather than to be those who are helping to deal with the situation as it is. So I think we have, but also we have to deal with the consequential impact. And I'm not sure to what extent we'll deal with some of the issues that may not necessarily be falling under the ambit of the Department of Mineral Resources, but because it may also be interpreted to be, instead of being a positive, critical engagement, we can engage, I'll be honest, we can engage with the Department of Mineral Resources. But what do you do when the actual authority does not fall in the Department of Mineral Resources, and therefore your critical engagement is on another power and authority which is outside? I think those are some of the issues we'll have to engage with them. For an example, if we are to be upfront, when we deal with the question of the of NIMA, surely the authority doesn't lie with the Department of Mineral Resources. So to what extent can we go much more deeper on that area without tampering with the work that others are supposed to be doing on that? I think in the long run, we'll have to go through those processes, because there is an interconnectedness, but also a separation of authority. Power could be the same, but in terms of who has got the final authority, it becomes something else. So we can't exhaust again. This is one of the issues. We can't sit and say we are exhausting them. We must deal with the cost implications, Babu Mkwai. The cost implications and the fact that in some of these areas where you talk about derelict and ownerless mine and the principle of polluter pays, it comes as an after effect when already there were no responsibilities and liabilities before. And you can no longer find people now who must take responsibility in relation to the principle of the polluter pays, because it's so difficult to trace them. So I'm just saying those are some of the issues that we will have to deal with them in the long run. Honourable members, can we go to the report on the Free State? I thought you wanted to go. That's why I was. If you request a 5 minutes break, you see, democracy. This is where the weakness of democracy is. I thought this 5-10 minutes we could do with the reports and the minutes, and then we release members. Okay, honourable members, we can look generally. We have not, but again, I assume when we deal with the reports, we specifically deal mostly with the recommendations, whether they are consistent, but also to some degree we also deal with the, what do you call, with the observations, if honourable members feel fit that we deal with those issues. Then we can deal with the language and other issues in terms of the what is contained in the contents of the report. The observations are on page 29 and page 30. Any comments on honourable members? Or I can assist. The first recommendation is observation, which is 5.1, is on the issue of the lack of enough inspectors in the province to undertake the responsibilities that are given. We can say this, Babu Msiza, we know every time you come here, we'll tell you about the problem of vacant posts and so forth and so forth. The reality, when we arrived in Free State, we can't hide it, which is one of the things we have made as an observation, is that the magnitude of problems and challenges in the Free State, it's so high. I would say it's a hive of activity, whether it's illegal mining, is mine health and safety, it's quite a number of issues. And we were of the view that if you are having 12 inspectors,
surely we're not saying it's something, but 12 inspectors, we don't think on that much. The dust that you're talking about in Soweto, just make an example about Free State, then you will understand when we talk about that. In Welkom alone, you meet almost, I said, in Free State, when we're in Welkom, you almost meet every mining problem that you can think of in one town. Whether is the problems of silicate dust problems, TPs and so forth, you'll find it there. Whether it's the issues of mine health and safety as a physical experience, you'll find it there. Whether it's illegal mining, you'll find it there. So it actually means if we're to be succinct, it has to be on the priority rider of the department in terms of delay. We're not saying cut from somewhere, but we think we will be doing justice to prioritize that area. Then there's an issue which we said, the problem which we said, I think we dealt with the issue. I must say also, when we deal with this report, most of the issues have already dealt with them previously. We have dealt with the problem of man health and safety as we're dealing with the PRRRs. We dealt with the issue just as an item on its own of illegal mining. It's going to be also part of our teamwork when we go to the next oversight, besides the one we are going to be having in the Western Cape early next year. But we're just saying that that problem that we identified is just one observation. You remember what has been a general complaint was that in that multi-disciplinary task team, where you've got police, intelligence, and so forth, part of the problem that was common was simply the issue that others were not consistent in terms of attendance and also carrying mandates. Then we think that there is a way, that's what the observation says, that there is no concrete and effective way to make sure that if, for instance, the department is there, it's not there just as a representation, it's effective, which actually generally still leaves the problem with the Department of Mineral Resources. So when you've got, for an example, a police officer from a police station doesn't have authority to take policy issues or direct interventions on what has to be done, he still has to say, I'll go to my superiors, and therefore the information doesn't flow. That's the point that we are raising. So that is the issue generally. Two issues that we still have to go back, because we have to factor them in. On bullet point 3, once we talked about the slides that were missing from the statistics of Harmony, we said they must include it. But Babugayama, we have to state what is contained in those slides. We don't just put it as slide 7, because the parliament won't see slide 7. It must see what is it that is on slide 7 that is missing. That's the only thing, honorable members, in the amendment of the report, we'll suggest we deal with them. And then there is an issue, the issue also of, yes, that's the issue. I've dealt with the issue, the province is one of the leading ones on illegal mining. The issue of, again, as effects of legal mining, just as an observation, the rate, the recovery rate that we're talking about of deceased bodies or deceased people. The problem of a clear strategy on the issue of managing unused, if there is such a word, of those mine hospitals. For an example, there was no clarity as to whether a hospital, you sell it when there's still demand in the community for the hospital. How do we deal with that issue? Then in terms of the representations, the recommendations, then we said that those lines that we're missing, we still need them from Harmony. Remember, they gave us some information, but they talked to it without giving us as a presentation. Then the issue of a concrete structure on illegal mining, the issue of the hospitals, we think there should be consultation between the provincial government, the mining companies, as well as municipalities, for one reason. There was one hospital, was it, in fact both, there are two, Harmony and I think Sibani. They said they sold to, what is it? Don't want to say a consortium or something.
but one section is still catered for the public. So with that saying, maybe the first priority must be given to the provincial government and local government to see whether they have an interest. Because now what actually happens once you sell that hospital to a private, private interest, it makes it difficult. It actually means public health must take responsibility in servicing effects and consequences of mining companies. That's the point that we're talking about. So, honourable members, that's the issue. Any mover for the report? Honourable Matlala, we accepted your apology, Babu Mkwana, but we can't include it here. No, it's a report. Yeah. No, the apology was accepted because we did receive a report that it was during the time you were standing in for the spokesperson of your organization. So as to the administrative matters, you will sort them with the house chair. Any second opinion?
Before chair.
Yes.
You said the honourable Matlala must speak on this report.
I never said.
It's unfortunate the name of honourable Matlala is not appearing on the delegations that went to oversight to Free State. Could you kindly put the name of honourable Matlala on the number of delegations that went to that Free State province? Thank you.
Yeah, your name was under the name of honourable Piginini, probably when the paper was being it cut off. Yeah. So that's why it doesn't appear. We'll put it by pen and take it. It's going to reflect. Yeah. Honorable, any seconder? Any seconder? Okay. The minutes of the 9th, page 1, page 2, no, excuse me, Babu, I'm so cut. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Now you can see, honourable members, we tried to put what we said we needed to do to brief up the actual discussion on the... Any mover? Honourable Beginning.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I wish to move that we accept this these minutes because it's a true reflection of what we discussed. You still remember, we've understood them. But the only matter was only one line or whatever pages that you need
okay.
to put emphasis on. Thank you very much, Chair.
Any second? Honorable Nyambi? Hey, honorable Nyambi, since he was a globetrotter, he came back.
Moroccan. Moroccan minute.
Chaperson.
Any matters arising, Mrs.
My apologies, honourable members, once again to interject. I wanted to raise a matter on the previous report, if I may.
Okay.
I think we highly appreciate the oversight role and the work that has been done by the committee as a department. I think it makes us strengthen our processes and where we need improving. We'll continuously do that. But I think for me it's also important, honourable members, to emphasise on the fact that, you know, I normally say this, that I'm deeply honoured to serve with the people that I work with, not only in Free State, but in all the provinces, including head office. You got a quick
sort of peek into what the Free State office is going through. But it's, I would like to assure you that it's not only the Free State. We have public servants who are genuinely there to serve the public, regardless of they know what their mandate is, but they will pull all the stops to ensure that whatever comes, they help. And Honorable Chairperson has correctly indicated that some of the areas, obviously, we're not within our mandate, but we are public servants. Where we can help, we try to help, right, with the capacity and resources that we have been provided. So we'll continuously work together with the honorable members, including other respective departments, to assist us in terms of capacity, not only within the department itself, but within the entities. You know, the entities also came here. There are issues that they've raised, you know. So I think for me it's very important that to emphasize that the issue that we, under the circumstances, we are doing our best, and the reports clearly indicate that, but our strive is to make sure that there's an impact. But there are still imminent, immense challenges that will, one of them is the issue of capacity. And I think we'll have to work together with them. But we'd like to also assure you that there are colleagues out there under difficult circumstances who really try their best, level best, to make sure that we serve the public. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. No. Any matters arising? What I like is that most of these things you have already dealt with it. Okay, minutes of the 16th, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7. Is it coincidental here that your minutes all end at page 7? Any mover? Any mover? Honorable Matlala?
Chair, I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 16th November 2016. Thank you.
Any seconder?
Thank you very much. I wish you
a second. Now, Honorable Mkwena is waiting for his local mate. So when the minister is not here, doesn't want to move anything. So we'll ask the minister to come back so that we can get the support of the Free State. Okay. Honorable members, as we move towards closure, we will forward you, no, we'll just forward to members invitations that we have received on something they call it is this land. It's what it's a show, ne? Something like a show. We will send it to you. Now, thank you very much, honorable members. Let me say this, Babum says, don't worry. Relax. One thing that we know, that discussion we will have, it will have to touch on those issues that we are talking about. The financial implications and cost. Sometimes the question of capacity, that's why we raise this thing. The question of capacity, we can't deal as if we are condemning people. Sometimes the question of capacity is not necessarily the willingness of people to participate. It's a numerical issue. But also in that space, it's also the deployment or the availability of specific specialized skills. So, it's not necessarily here. We made an example again in resourcing the department, and I think we have to be upfront. And that's why I was saying even to Mr. Mkwai, Honorable Mkwai, it's a huge debate that we need to have. That the more you are not putting resources, for instance, on where revenue is supposed to be generated, is that we'll not be able to supply your social services side. That is simple economic arithmetic. So if we are unable to rescue, so we have to deal with the question of how do we deal with issues of prioritization. And when we say this, we're not saying it to the department, for an example, that it doesn't want to employ inspectors. We're saying part of our responsibility as an oversight in this committee is that there must be a balance of scale to make sure that you don't cut in such a way that what is supposed to be done, which is a risk, two things. We are revenue generators, but we are also is risk prevention. That remains a responsibility of the state, in this case of this department. So we have to find on to what extent do we create this balance. I must say, though, when it comes to the Free State, maybe, Honorable Mkwana, you have thought of something else. Besides small things that had nothing to do with the department, which we had to manage, it was one province that I'm not again trying to praise someone or to say it's bad, but it was one province, both from the department side, from the municipality side, from the provincial government side, but also from the stakeholders, when we went there. I think the level of preparations and cooperation was quite excellent. Especially, there's one person that I always say we should appreciate. When he was presenting, he reminded him. There's one guy there in that local municipality, I just forget the name of the municipality, who made a presentation that could have been almost 25 pages, and he did it in almost 10 just above 10 minutes, but you could get the sense of what he was doing. Clearly, you were dealing with someone who knew, didn't have to read and so forth, who knew what he was dealing, but was able to give a sense. So, even when you arrive, the department knew. In some cases, when we go, you can say that, hey, some of us know what, hey, going to be so in the way it is. No, we must be honest. The manner, I think I speak on behalf of the committee, the manner we're treated, the manner in which every time we required something, both from the department side, from the mining companies we visited, I don't think we can falter and say we received. In fact, even the flexibility, others would say, like the one we went to when we received that on the illegal mining, we said we were starting there. They were not on the schedule, but we had to go there because we received information of what was happening. So in as much as there's minimal, that's why I was saying to you one day, the more you talk about successes, the risk is very high that you are demotivating for you to get more people to do the job, because when you can achieve a certain percentage so high, and then you come back and say, I've got capacity problems, people will say, but what capacity? Because you can do so much. So it's a catch 22. But I think we can say without certainty. One thing I think I must say lastly in this committee. Yes, I think I did report in the committee. It's important to just say that again. A complaint when we were at about our visit at Beatrix Mine. Is it Beatrix Mine, eh? That a person was amongst those who were making presentations on health and safety, who I'm told was an NUM local chairperson. Listen correctly, I received a call allegedly saying that person was it's an NSOP. That person has been dismissed by the company for relating a certain information. I requested that if there is such a thing, they must email it or send it to me so that I can attend to the matter. Regrettable, up until now, I've not received that correspondence. So I can then talk about that issue, because to me it has not received. But since I received that call, nothing has happened since then. So I don't want people that tomorrow, maybe they will say, no, we did phone the chair. I can't deal with something that comes through a phone. There must be concrete information that is submitted so that I can be able either to handle and account in the committee or bring it to the committee for the committee to understand what is happening. So I'm just saying, even if you meet people who say, no, we did give our complaint to the chair, anything that a person is complaining about, I must get something so that I can account on it. I have not received up until now. Honorable members, thank you very much. See you in the next sitting of the committee and in the sitting today in the House. Thank you very much.